Okay. This week's parasha is Parashas Acharei Mos and Kedoshim. We will be focusing tonight on a pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim, which is on page 660. So this is page 660, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yudalad. Goyis Kalel Cheresh, you shall not curse a deaf person. Lifnei Iver Lo Sitei Nichshol, in the front of the blind you shall not put a stumbling block. V'yareisim Eloikecha Ani Hashem, you shall have fear from your God. I am Hashem. So let's take a look at Rashi. Look at Rashi on the right column. Rashi is 2, 4, 6, 8, about 8, 9 lines from the top. On the right column, Rashi explains, what does this mean, don't put a stumbling block in front of the blind? In front of someone who is blind regarding a matter, don't give him advice that's not good for him. Al Toimar, for instance, don't say, Mechar Sadcha, sell your field, Bekach Lecha Chamor, and go buy yourself a donkey. Meaning he's coming to you, he's got this, you know, this business question, right? He has a field and he needs a donkey. What do you think I should do? Should I sell my field and buy the donkey? Should I leave it? You know, what should I do? So what do you tell him? You tell him, yeah, you should sell the field and buy a donkey. And what you're really trying to do is, you want to get his field. So you advise him to sell his field to buy the donkey so that you should be able to then go buy the field yourself. So basically, you gave him bad advice. He came to you for some advice and you gave him bad advice. It doesn't, wait a second, right now, according to Rashi, the point is that the interpretation of blind is not literal. It doesn't mean literally blind. It means he's blind regarding this matter. He's blind mentally, if you want to call it, in the sense of, you know, he doesn't know what's going on. And, or as Rashi makes it sound like, he's blind regarding this matter. Doesn't know what to do in this matter. And you give him bad advice. You have transgressed his prohibition in front of the blind. Do not put a stumbling block. Now, Rashi makes a case where you have something to gain from it. Doesn't have to be that way. Rashi gave a case that you gain something from it because why would you give him bad advice otherwise? The most normal case of giving bad advice would be because you have something to gain from it. But in essence, the fact that you gave him the bad advice, that was the stumbling block that you put in front of him. Now, it's interesting that, you know, what makes Rashi interpret, not Rashi, I mean, it's Chazal. What is it in the Pasuk that makes them decide to say that the Pasuk means more than what it says? The Pasuk says, in front of the blind, don't put a stumbling block. Literally, what would that mean? There's a blind person, and you want to play a mean trick, right, and watch him fall. So you put something in front of him to trip over. Torah says, you know how to do that. What now made Chazal add more to it than that? So the commentator of the Sifsa Chachamim asked this question, and he says that really Rashi himself answers this based on the next Rashi, on the words V'yareisim Eloikecha, you shall have fear from your God. Why here, after telling us not to make a stumbling block in front of someone, why here does the Torah say you shall have fear from your God? And Rashi explains, L'fisha dabar hazeh eino masa l'briyas. This matter people don't recognize. Leida imdaite shalzeh l'tayvay l'ra. They don't know what your intention is when you're giving the advice. V'yachal v'yishamet v'loymar. So this person could always excuse himself and say, l'tayvay neskavanti. I meant for his good. Maybe it didn't work out that way, but I meant for his good. L'fikach ne'am abay v'yaysim aloykecha. And therefore the Torah says, and have fear from your God. Hamakir machshaveisecha. He recognized your thoughts. So being that we're talking about here something that you could, you know, you're not going to be afraid from other people to give him bad advice because they don't realize it's bad advice. So the Torah therefore says, okay, people don't recognize it, but God recognizes it. And therefore the Torah here stresses, v'yareisim elokecha, have fear from your God. So the Sifsa Chachamim says, if and Rashi says in general, whenever the Torah then says, v'yareisim elokecha, you should have fear from your God after something, the whole point there is to stress this idea, that even though people may not recognize what you're doing, I recognize what you're doing, Hashem says. Therefore, says Sifsa Chachamim, if the pasuk only meant the literal, don't put something in front of blind man to trip over, that's something obvious, that's something people can recognize and see. They can see you put that thing in front of him. So if the Torah had to now tell us, v'yareisim elokecha, you shall have fear from your God, which means because the Torah is addressing something that people don't recognize, it must be that there's something more going on here. That it's not the literal meaning of putting an actual stumbling block in front of a literally blind person, but it means the person is blind in the sense not because he's literally blind, but blind regarding this matter. And you're giving him bad advice. That is what the Torah is warning us. That's something people don't recognize, and therefore the Torah there has to say, v'yareisim elokecha, have fear from your God.
But what about...
One second.
Does anybody comment on the first part of the sentence? Because it's the same sentence. You should not curse the dead.
Well, it seems that the word v'yareisim would be going on...
On both of them?
Maybe, yeah, maybe not.
Doesn't talk about
I didn't see that. No, Rashi does not address that. Okay.
But what does it mean?
What does what mean?
Do you think you believe it's just a literal thing? You just don't do it. You don't curse the death.
Which
cursing
one?
The death.
The death.
Oh, I see. Okay, sorry. Okay, that makes more sense.
Okay.
But now, there is an opinion that
we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, okay. The Baal HaTurim says that the reason that the way we actually see from the pasuk that there's something more going on here than the literal stumbling block in front of somebody literally blind is because if you look at the wording of the pasuk where it says v'lifnei iver, in front of the blind lo yisitein michshol, do not put a stumbling block. The word michshol means stumbling block. This word michshol is spelled chaser. It's missing a letter. It should have been mem chav shin vav lamed. Instead, the Torah left out the vav and just put the o sound there. So therefore, the Baal HaTurim says, the fact that the Torah wrote michshol chaser, missing a letter, it means to allude that we're not talking about your literal michshol. We're not talking about your actual stumbling block. But rather, we're talking about something that's figuratively a stumbling block, which would be a bad piece of advice.
But by the way, the deaf is a similar idea, because the deaf doesn't hear you, and therefore it makes sense.
Right. Okay. Now, another thing, sorry.
We assume the advice he gives him. What if this person, all his advice is no good? He's supposed to give his best advice? Or
if he has no, if he, as they say, if he can't say something good, don't say it at all.
But he doesn't know that.
Well, if he doesn't mean to hurt the other person, right, then that's a different story. But here we're talking about that you're intentionally doing it. Now, another part that's included in this halacha of not causing someone to stumble is causing someone to sin. You cannot enable someone to perform a sin. If you enable a person to perform a sin, you have transgressed, do not put a stumbling block in front of the blind. We're calling a person who is about to sin, someone who's blind. And we'll see exactly how the word blind fits in. But the stumbling block that you're putting in front of this person is the sin that you're enabling him to do, or the sin that you're convincing him to do. So included in don't put a stumbling block in front of your friend means do not enable or cause him to sin. It is very interesting to note, and maybe this is what you want to tell. If it's something else, I'll give you a chance in a second. It's very interesting to note that there is a question amongst the commentaries and amongst the halachic authorities as to whether the pasuk should even be interpreted in its literal sense. Meaning, according to some opinions, The Torah is actually not even talking about putting an actual stumbling block in front of a blind person. The Torah is not talking about that. The Torah never even meant it. The Torah, it's all figurative. And the Torah only means either giving a bad piece of advice or enabling and causing someone to sin. So that's an interesting...
That's exactly the point.
Okay.
In fact, I could even expand that nothing here in front of us is literal and everything is like...
Okay.
It could be interpreted.
Okay.
It should be
interpreted. It is very interesting. You know, I didn't delve into it why they take it out of the literal sense, but, you know, but there are those who learn that way. That so according to some, there's three ways of transgressing this, and according to others, there's only two. Now, when we talk about causing that you're putting a stumbling block in front of the blind means causing them to sin, in again, under certain circumstances, that is going to be true whether that person is sinning inadvertently or intentionally. Now, if the person that you're causing them to sin, they don't realize they're sinning. Okay, so they're blind in the fact that they don't realize what's happening here is wrong. But the halacha is that it applies even to someone who knows they're doing a sin. And you're enabling them to do the sin, and we'll talk about examples of that soon. Okay? But you're enabling them to do a sin that they know they're doing. So what are they? Where's the blindness? What makes them blind? And the answer that I saw is that the reason they're blind is that they're blinded from the truth. Because of their desire to do, their desires, their passions are blinding them. So they know what they're doing, but they're blinded from the truth. Now, examples of the of making someone commit a sin that we say is also included in this prohibition. So if you persuade someone to do something wrong, you're persuading them. They know it's wrong, but you're persuading them to do it. That is a form of putting a stumbling block. If, let's say, you convince someone that it's okay to do, you know, you convince them this is permissible. Again, that's putting a stumbling block in front of them. Famous example that the Gemara gives is if someone is a nazir, that means they took upon themselves the vow of naziris, which includes not drinking wine, not cutting your hair, not coming into contact with a dead body, the impurity of a dead body. Okay? And you take a cup of wine and you say, here. Okay? That's an example of don't put a stumbling block in front of someone. You are enabling him to sin. Okay? Another example. There is a prohibition to borrow money on interest and to lend money on interest. Both ways. Well, when each one does it, not only are they transgressing the prohibition about interest, but they're putting a stumbling block in front of the other person because they're enabling the other person to do what they're doing wrong on interest. Okay. All right, so those are two examples. Now, okay. Here is a very interesting, here's where I talk about a few of the some ideas in some halachas that revolve around are the parameters for this prohibition. So the Gemara says like this. The Gemara says a rule that if, let's say, this person, you're enabling the person to do a sin, but they could very easily have done it themselves. They don't really need you to help them do the sin. So for instance, the Gemara says that if, let's say, the Nazir, there's this river, okay, or this brook, okay, and the Nazir is on one side of the brook, right? On his side, no wine. There's no wine on his side, okay? On the other side, there's wine, but he can't get to the other side because of the water. He can't reach it. And now you, out of the goodness of your heart, I shouldn't say that, go ahead, and now you hand him the wine. So he couldn't get the wine if not for you. That is called enabling him. That is when we say you're putting a stumbling block in front of him. But if, let's say, you know, he could have gotten the wine without you giving it to him. Maybe he's got wine on his side too. You decide you're going to give him the wine from your side. Basically, if it's easy for him, if he could have easily obtained this wine to do the sin without you, then when you are giving him the wine, you are not transgressing this prohibition. You're not transgressing the prohibition itself. Now, there are different opinions about, let's say on his side, you're giving him the wine from your side, and on his side, if he wanted to get wine, he'd have to buy it. What if he'd have to buy the wine? So according to some, they say, well, if he could buy the wine, that means he was able to obtain the wine himself. Others say, well, when it comes to buying, who says he's going to want to buy? Who says he's going to try to buy from someone else? Maybe he won't make it. Maybe he won't like his price.
But you make it easier for him.
In that case, they're saying that you can't assume that buying automatically means it's obtainable. At the same time, according to all opinions, if the wine on his side would be very expensive, or you know that it would be really hard for him to go buy the wine, then everybody agrees you're enabling him and you would transgress this prohibition of Lifnei Iber. Now, what is important to know is that even if we're saying there are certain circumstances, like for instance, just stick with this circumstance. Even in the case where, let's say, it's easy for him to obtain the wine himself, he didn't need you to obtain the wine, right? So we say, if you give him the wine, you're not transgressing this prohibition. It doesn't mean you're allowed to do it. It means that this law, this prohibition, you're not transgressing. But there is a general obligation, la'afrushe me'isura, to prevent a fellow Jew from sinning. There's a general rule that you should prevent someone else from sinning. Now, the difference between transgressing lifnei iber and this is, well, you know, it may be practical. I can't tell you some practical differences right now, but at the same time, you know, there are different levels. You know, a prohibition is a serious type of sin. So if you're transgressing lifnei iber, you're transgressing a prohibition, that's a very serious type of sin. This obligation that you should make sure you should prevent your fellow Jew from sinning, we'll talk about what the sources for that possibly could be, and then we'll see that is not as serious as the prohibition. So some actually say that the general obligation to prevent a fellow Jew from sinning is actually a derabbanan. It's actually a rabbinic obligation. It's not a Torah obligation. It's an extension of this mitzvah. The Rabbanan saw, the sages saw, the Torah says, don't put a stumbling block in front of someone, don't cause someone to sin. So even when that actual prohibition doesn't apply, the Rabbanan said, but in the spirit of that idea, you should always try to prevent someone from sinning. So that obligation would say, don't give him the wine anyway. But again, that's not a law, that's not a Torah prohibition. Others say that it's actually part of a different mitzvah in this week's parsha, which we could actually find on the same page, page 660, Pasuk Yud Zayin, three lines from the bottom. The Torah says, "Loisisna es achicha belvavecha." Do not hate your brother in your heart. Hoicheach toichiach es amisecha. You shall rebuke your friend. This is the mitzvah that says, the Torah says, if you see that someone is doing something wrong, you have an obligation to point it out to him. Why? Because you have an obligation to prevent him, to stop him from sinning. So therefore, the same way you rebuke someone to make sure he doesn't do the wrong again, that would also tell you, you know, in any other situation to prevent him from sinning, you should do so. But again, that would be that would be a positive commandment. If you have lifnei iver, you have a law of prohibition, which is actually a higher level sin. So even if you, at least in this example, where you don't have an actual prohibition of putting a stumbling block, still you're not allowed to do it because of the general obligation to prevent someone from sinning. Now, another thing is that we know that a Gentile has Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, right? The seven Noachai laws. So if I enable a non-Jew to transgress one of his mitzvahs, am I transgressing the prohibition of lifnei iver, of putting a stumbling block in front of the blind? The answer is yes. you are not permitted, this prohibition applies to causing a Gentile to transgress on one of the seven mitzvahs. Now, there is another interesting difference of opinion in the fact that, let's take a look again at the wording of the pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'lefnei iver lo sitei mechshol," in front of the blind, do not put a stumbling block. All right? What happens if I put the stumbling block in front of the person and he doesn't trip? He didn't trip.
Well, why did you do it? For him to trip?
Why you did it. But this is the question right now. You put the stumbling block there and he didn't stumble. You gave him bad advice. He didn't take it. You tried, you stuck out that cup of wine to the nazir. And the nazir took it and he said, "Bah." And then he dropped it.
I think you're guilty.
Yeah.
Why? What's your basis?
Because you did the wrong thing. It doesn't matter what he did.
Maybe you only did something. Maybe you're, the wrong that you do has to be a wrong that actually came about being a wrong.
That is not what the text says.
So your point is the text says, "Lifnei iver, don't put." Right? If you put it, you put it. It doesn't say it has to happen. Okay, that is clearly how some learn. Others disagree and say that it has to actually basically... it has to come out that something actually came from the stumbling block. Because perhaps you wouldn't call it a stumbling block unless you actually stumbled over it.
Wait, so you go around and enticing people to sin?
And they don't listen to you?
It doesn't.
And they don't listen to you. So you didn't put a stumbling block in front of them at the end. You tried, but you didn't do it. It didn't become a stumbling block.
Right.
That would be the other argument.
There is such thing as statement of damages. If damages didn't occur, nobody could blame you.
Okay. Although there's something similar to that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, here's a very interesting question that comes up. And this could be relevant to a lot of things. There is a sefer called Sha'ar HaMelech. And the Sha'ar HaMelech talks about the following question. This case is a really interesting case. But, you know, the case is brought down where a sheikh had slaughtered an animal. Okay. The sheikh had said, "It wasn't good. I didn't do it good. I didn't do it right." And two witnesses are looking and said, "We didn't see anything wrong. We looked at, you know, the knife was sharp. You did the act. You're telling me you did something wrong. We looked at it. We looked the whole time. It looked fine. Absolutely fine. We see absolutely nothing wrong." You know, witnesses that probably have the ability to say that, you know. But he says, "No, I pressed down too hard. I whatever I did." And they look at him and they said, "No, that's not true. We watched you. You did it fine." Okay, so can we eat the meat? The two witnesses say, "Fine." The sheikh says, "No good. What can we eat the meat or not? Who do we have to listen to?"
Witnesses.
So the answer is, we all listen to the witnesses. The sheikh, who says it was no good, he can't eat the meat. If he says no good, he can't eat it.
He won't eat it anyway.
Well, I don't know, maybe if the halacha would say eat it, he'd eat it. But he can't. Halachically, he may not eat it. Okay? So now the question becomes, well, alright, you all can eat it. Can the sheikhet serve it to you? I mean, you can all eat it. So maybe the sheikhet can serve it to you. You're not doing anything wrong. You're allowed to eat it. The only thing is, but is that from the sheikhet's point? From the sheikhet's point, you can't eat it. So the Sha'ar HaMelech says that in that situation, if from the sheikhet's point, if from your point, it's you, if from your point, everyone else is not allowed to eat it. Practically speaking, they don't have to listen to you. But if from your point, they all may not eat it, you can't feed it to them.
It's a very sophisticated.
You cannot feed it. You can't feed it to them. You can't feed it. That's an interesting question. That's an interesting question. But at the end of the day, you the sheikh, you can't feed it to them saying, "Well, you guys can, practically speaking, you guys can eat it. From your point, you're allowed to eat it. All the rabbanim say you're allowed to eat it. But if from your point, you can't eat it, you, the person who's now giving to them, you say they can't eat it, you can't give it."
These are witnesses that are qualified.
Yeah. Let's assume that, yes. They're qualified to be able to say, yeah, it was good.
Specialist.
Right. Okay. Now, alright, so here we have an example where, you know, the person is saying that it's forbidden because I'm the way I saw it, it was no good. You know, we're kind of arguing over the facts. But from my point, the facts are that it was no good. How about if, let's say, it's not an issue of facts, but it's an issue of argument? Meaning, I hold something's forbidden. You hold something's permissible. Can I feed that to you? It's a halakhic argument. Halakhic argument about whether you could eat something or do something. Okay, it's a halakhic argument. I say, you can't. I say, no, you can't eat it. You say you could eat it. Oh, yeah? Here. Can I do that? Can I feed it to you?
You wouldn't because you feel...
I would, you wouldn't. Are you allowed to?
Probably not.
So the answer is, it's going to depend. It's going to depend. It's going to depend like this. It's going to depend as to when you say you're not allowed to, why are you saying you're not allowed to? If you're saying you're not allowed to because your opinion, I feel, is wrong, it's a mistake, and from my point, you're not allowed to because you're making a mistake, then I can't feed it to you. But let's say we have an argument, and you know, I can't say you're making a mistake. You have validity to what you're arguing. I don't want to go that way. I want to be stricter. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I don't want to go that way. I feel to go stricter. You have an argument, you have a halachic basis, you have a valid argument. I don't like it, but I can't tell you you're wrong. Or I have leanings towards one way, so I'm going to be stricter. But basically, I'm not saying you're wrong. Then I can give it to you. Yeah. Then I can give it to you. Because I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying it's forbidden for you. I personally feel that we should be... I feel that I should be stringent in this matter. My understanding is that I'm not saying that you're wrong. It's just that I feel this is the way we should go. The two ways I feel this is the way we should go. Then it wouldn't be a problem. This is one of the ways of approaching a common question. You know, some people open up bottles on Shabbos, some people don't. You know, the plastic bottle top on Shabbos, right? So some people do, some people don't. So can the don't ask the do to open it up for them?
No.
So some say, that's unethical. But let's not go that way. Excuse me?
Putting some work for a bond.
Well, here's a question. Depends. If I hold that you're not allowed to open that bottle top, I went through this question, and I learned through the subject, and I hold you're not allowed, then I can't ask you. Because then I'm putting a stumbling block in front of you. But if, I'm talking about the other fellow Jew, but let's say, asking you're going to be, could be the same kind of problem. But if the point is that, yeah, you know there's those who do, there's don't. There's those who do, those who don't. You're following the stricter, but I'm not saying it's forbidden. You'd be allowed to. That's one approach. That's an approach. So that's another kind of interesting question that comes up here.
Plastic,
A lot of people open them, but some people who don't. Okay. So I want to read to you now from what's called Masech HaSmachas. It's in the back of the Gemara Avodah Zarah. A number of brises. They weren't included in the Mishnah, but they come from the Tanoim, the number of Brises. And one of them is called Maseches Smachos. And Maseches Smachos. Says the following. This is a very interesting statement about causing others to sin. So there is a pasuk. And the pasuk is in. Hold on 1 second. Oh, okay. The pasuk is in Devarim Yud Beis. Let's turn to Devarim Yud Beis. Okay. Let's actually turn to page 998. Parshas Re'eh, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis. Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Beis. Last line of the page. Abei ta'abdun, you shall destroy. Eskola makaymais asher avdu shama goyim. All the places where the nations worship there. Asher atem yershem oisem es eloyeyem, that you are possessing them and their gods. Al haharim arabim v'alagva'ois, on the high mountains and on the hills. V'sachas kol eitzranan, and under all leafy trees. V'itatztemes nizbechaysam. You shall destroy their altars. V'shibaratem es matzei v'aysam. And you shall break their pillars. V'asherehem tesrefun be'esh. And their asherah trees, these were trees that were involved in idol worship, in pagan worship, you shall burn in fire. So we're saying, you gotta destroy the altars, you gotta break down the trees. So, Pesachas Machas brings the following question. You shall destroy their altars. What did the wood and the stone do wrong? Why are you destroying them? The people used it wrong. Why are you destroying them? What did they do wrong? But because they were a takala, they were an obstacle, they were a stumbling block for people, meaning they were used for idol worship. The Torah says destroy it. Something that enabled, something that abetted people to sin, shouldn't be around. If so, we can now make a kal v'chomer. Wood and stone have no merit, have no demerits, have no good, have no bad. Al shavah takala yideyam la'adam, being that through them a takala, a stumbling, came through them to man. Omra tarvini touch them. The Torah says, you shall destroy them. Adam shehu gairim lahachti es chaveri, a person who causes his friend to sin. And takes him from the path of life to the path of death. Al achas kama v'kama, how much more so? If the Torah said that an inanimate object that was a cause for sinning, the Torah says, get rid of it. If it was a cause for taking a person away from the path of life, if a person does that to another person, he deserves the same. That's the severity of causing someone to sin. Now, I want to conclude this discussion with the words of Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch in his book Chorev, where he goes through the mitzvahs of the Torah, and he writes so beautifully sometimes. It's just so beautiful the way he puts things out, lays things out. And a lot of what he lays out here discussing this mitzvah, it's very interesting because, you know, I'm not sure if all of them are halachic in the sense that they all fall under this prohibition. Do they fall under a different prohibition? Or is he actually speaking in the spirit of the mitzvah? But let me read here what he says. Okay? Do not put anything in the path of him who is blind of eye, which might make him stumble. Remove everything from his path which might do harm to him who is afflicted. Not only the blind, but all those physically afflicted, all physically weak, children too, are recommended to the protection of the healthy, the strong, and the adult. Do not harm them by abusing your guardianship. Be the eyes of the blind, the staff of the lame, the support of the sick, and guide to children and the aged. So he sounds like, number one, that he's taking it a literal sense, right? He sounds like he's following the literal interpretation.
Well, at least.
At least, right? Yeah. Well, that's where he started from. Right. The literal interpretation. Right. And, first of all, it's not only don't put a stumbling block, he says, take a stumbling block away, yeah. Which is interesting. And then he really applies it to anybody who's physically weak. Anybody physically weak. He's not blind, he's lame, help him walk. And he talks about a child. You know, you gotta take care of the kid. You can't just leave the kid like that. You can't just let him go. You have an obligation. You have an obligation to protect him from stumbling. You know, he's taking it in a very, very interesting direction. Okay? Be the eyes of the blind, the staff of the lame, the support of the sick, and guide the children of the aged. Now, very interesting. Next. Now that's his blind, physically blind, so to speak. To the blind of mind. Blind of mind are the, I don't know exactly this word he's saying here, but it means blind of mind who can't make judgment. The inexperienced, also the young and infants. You to whom God has granted more intelligence and judgment, and to whom he sends a person who is mentally handicapped, or you who are asked for advice by any one of your fellow men, be his guardian and lend him your intelligence for his benefit and not to his disadvantage. Fear God who scrutinizes you thoroughly and knows your innermost secrets and sees whether you have given your advice according to the best of your knowledge and as though it were in your own interest. That's how you should be giving advice. Or whether you have abused your fellow man's confidence to his detriment. Now, parents, teachers, brothers and sisters, friends, and all you who exert influence by deed and by the written or spoken word on young souls, they are blind of mind and their minds are illuminated by the light of your mind. What you, by your word and example, tell them to be true and good will be regarded by them as true and good for a long time. And they will base their life on it until they are able to judge for themselves. Do not put a stumbling block into their path. Don't fill their heads with garbage. Don't fill their heads with the wrong things. That's bad advice. That's bad guardianship. That's bad guidance. Woe to them if you are not honest with them, if you present to them false doctrine as the truth, evil as good, falsehood as truth, if you turn night into day and the daylight of truth into darkness. One day they will awake and curse you, and God will hear that curse. For fear him if you do not fear human beings, he sees into your heart. This is unbelievable. He talked about the person who needs, who's maybe, starts out talking about the person who's mentally incapacitated, handicapped. Yeah. Don't steer him in the wrong way. Then you have the person who needs advice. Give him proper advice as if it was your own need. And then if you have the ability, you are the parent, teacher, writer, whoever you are, teacher, right? You have these young minds, and you're going to mold those minds. You're going to put information in those minds, and those minds are what's going to guide them for a very long time. If you put into them falsehood, you are the equivalent of giving them this bad advice, which the Torah prohibits. So, just beautiful, beautiful idea.
What chapter is that?
This is chapter 52.
Yes. Now, chapter 52.
Right. To the blind of heart. Blind of heart are all those whose heart is frivolous, disposed to sin, but who just lack the opportunity for sin. It's not good in here. Right, it's not good. They're just waiting for the chance. Beware of giving the opportunity of sinning to such a person, of showing him the path of sin, of making it easier for him to be helped onto it. Do not say, am I doing it? It's up to him not to do it. I didn't tell him to do it. He's a big boy. He doesn't have to do it. Torah says, nope. Yours is the sin which he commits, for you gave him the opportunity. Again, he says, all you exert influence by deed and the spoken or written word on the young. The young above all are blind of heart. The fire of youth is easily prone to sin and sensuality, equally open to good and to evil. It is in your hands whether their hearts become a garden of God or overgrown by weeds. Do not put a stumbling block into the path of the blind, but clear their path of it. One word, one gesture, an image, the description of animal sensuality, one frivolous word can kindle in their minds a flame, which you will try in vain to extinguish. Can it loosen them the beast which you will hardly be able to curb? God will call you to account for the human hearts entrusted to you. On you rests the responsibility for the propensity which breaks out even in advanced age to being ruined to a man and to the world. Again, if you're not supposed to be enabling a person to sin, be very careful of how you deal with young people. Now, I would feel here that this is not necessarily a literal prohibit transgression, because I mean, if I said something and that kindled, you know, the passion in them, they didn't do yet something until later, I don't know if you could say that I put the stumbling block. Stumbling block, very often, the examples of stumbling blocks that we had were a little bit, were more direct. I gave you the wine. Right? I borrowed an interest. Here I got them going, but you don't know to when that they could be doing this much later.
But you gave him the idea. I don't think that much.
Okay, I don't know. It's something to think about. I'm not sure. I'm not sure because he's applied, because he's not using this as an example of bad advice. He's putting this under the, you know, getting them to sin. Right. So again, is the fact that you now kindle the passion in them that they're going to try to fulfill later, is that called you gave them the wine? I don't know. Maybe it does. You know, I did see that there was a discussion about something very indirect as to whether that's called putting a stumbling block. But I think even if not, it's at least the spirit of what's going on. And it's just really a unbelievable, you know, approach that he has here, and how he takes this mitzvah and how he applies it to some really important situations. And the final paragraph, which we'll conclude with, God, who is a God of love, who demands pity and clemency from all mankind, for all his creatures, has excluded only the seducer from the sphere of pity and clemency and singled him out as the lowest and most evil of all, in himself the source of evil. That is why we should watch our mien and bearing, our words and deeds, not only that we should not stumble, but also that we should not become stumbling blocks in the path of others. For we are called to account not only for the loss of our own righteousness, but also for those who have lost it directly or indirectly through our fault. So the Rebbeinu Hashem should help us make sure that we only give other people positive influences and not negative influences.
Very powerful.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.